This week's episode of the FitCast has music by Eric Skiff and Trash 80. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org. Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 240. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me, first off, is Dr. Jonathan Fast. John, what's up, man?
What the dealio?
Sandy take a poop in your house yet?
Not quite yet. Oh, she is waiting to.
Yeah,
she's
just letting that thing cook in there. Great. And we also have a special guest star. We've had him on in the past. He was a regular. He's a frequent contributor to the Lord of the Rings fan blog, .blogspot.com. Tony, what's up, man?
Hey, man. I'm expecting a slow clap right here that I'm back on. It's been so long.
No.
What's going on, guys?
Well, we were going to have Leon, but like we talk about, she's actually in the off-topic discussion, but her internet kind of crapped out thanks to the infrastructure down south.
Is that true, or is it that Skype won't allow multiple...
No, her internet kind of freaks out when there's lots of bandwidth. I think she doesn't have the wonderful access to like Comcast high speed that we have up here in the north.
She's in North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but she lives like, you know, Jenny's farm in Forrest Gump? She lives on Jenny's farm.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, last time I thought she was in Charlotte, but I'm obviously wrong.
She's more in the burbs.
Okay.
So anyways, she's not on the show, so it's just going to be the dudes, and we're probably going to be hitting on a wider range of stuff as well. So don't be afraid if you are a woman, you have the sexy trio of Tony, John, and myself. So
it's a sausage party, but it's a paleo sausage party.
Indeed.
Yeah, for the fitters out there. So a couple things that we're going to get into real quick. First off, don't forget to make sure that you are subscribing to the podcast through iTunes. Keep that in mind. It makes your life a lot easier. Even if you don't listen to the podcast on your iPhone, you can just take the MP3 right from there and drag it to your Android device. So please make sure that you're hitting that up. Also, submit a review. This is, this is another push for me to get on a regular schedule with the podcast. But this is 3 and 4 weeks, so that's not too bad. Also, we will be following up with Whitney Sickler next podcast. So if you have, there was a lot of feedback. We had a lot of people that wanted some follow-up and some clarification on some stuff from her first talk. So we will be having her back on. If you want to get in on the discussion about what Whitney talked about last time, you can send in those to questions@theficast.com. You can also go to theficast.com and go to the contact page at the top and submit your emails and comments that way. She's going to answer all the questions that we got in, because again, it's not a black and white topic, and people like to kind of take sides on this debate, the raw food debate. So the only way I would, the only side I would kind of take is it's better to kind of lean towards getting in more just unprocessed food. We can all agree with that. So that's just one of the benefits of going that route. Also,
the side that I would take is the west side.
No, yeah, but
right, Tony, thank
you.
East coast is the best coast, right?
So this is kind of like a paleo. I got a good paleo joke.
Yeah, do it.
Oh,
so when I was up in Toronto speaking, what was it, in June? It might have been, it was Mark Young. This is a great paleo joke. He's like, how do you know when somebody's paleo?
How?
How, Tony?
They tell you. You know what I mean? Like everything, they'll immediately tell you, yo, I'm paleo. said that, I erupted laughing when he said
that's
that.
That's pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
Not bad. Solid stuff for Mark.
It's a good one, right?
That is funny.
I like simple jokes.
Yeah.
You know what? I think it's all good. All right. So Let's do this. We're going to pause for a second. We're going to be right back to make sure my recording equipment is functioning properly. So stick around. Okay, we're back. Everything recorded fine, so we are good to go. I wanted to shoot it off to Tony because we haven't talked to Tony in a while and just see what you've been up to, Tony. How things at Crisis Performance and, you know, at TonyGeneralCore.com, and I know you've been doing some speaking engagements.
Yeah, it's, you know, 2012 has been a pretty busy year for me. Like, we are, we're down about 5 weeks where Crisis Performance is going to be expanding to 15,000 plus square foot.
That's facility. Awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. Like, we're not moving. We're just moving to the other side of the building.
Yep.
And it's kind of surreal to think of it because the facility that we're moving into, like, we're going to have our own lobby and we're going to have 5 offices. Like, the lobby of the place we're moving into is bigger than our original facility.
Great.
And so it's kind of cool to think about, you know, in the 5 years that we've been in operation, that's how far we've come. And, you know, we're excited. Like, we're currently doing the renovations right now. Like, we're getting the flooring done. And we're going to have an athlete lounge where a lot of our minor league guys and our pro guys can – we're going to have a ping pong table, Xbox. So I'm fully expecting a lot of fist fights this offseason. with Metal Gear, and it's like, yeah, I'm sure you got to come and get your game on too, Larry.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you guys are ever interested, I got some line on some arcade machines.
Yeah,
you can't have any of mine, but
that could be in the mix. So we're slated for a grand opening of August 25th. You know, it's going to be a pretty eventful weekend. I mean, it's, from what I hear, we're going to have quite a few people just come up and hang out. Like, I think Roman's going to make an appearance. Ben Bruno's going to stop by. I'm trying to convince, like, some of the girls going strong, girls to come up, like Molly Galbraith, and some of them. But, yeah, there's that. As far as me personally, like, you know, I've been, you know, still doing my writing thing. Like you said, I've been speaking. So, you know, I did a speaking engagement with Dean Somerset, Rick Kucelich, and Dr. Jeff Kubos in Edmonton in early June. And then, Nick Tumanello and I did a pre-seminar up in Toronto, and then the following day it was us two along with Dan Trank, Mark Young, and John Goodman, and Jeff Gerbitz. And so I've been 2012 has been good so far. I can't complain. So I'm glad to be back talking to you guys, though. It's been way too long.
Yeah, no, it's good to get back on the line, and it's awesome that things are going so well. And I think one of the, you know, best piece of advice that people can ever get for opening a facility is that don't expand too fast. You always have time to expand, and you know, being busy and full is a good thing.
Yep. I can't stress that enough. And actually, when up in Toronto in June, after we did a round table at the end of the seminar, and one of the questions was like, you know, how would you go about, you know, people wanting to open up their own facility? What pieces of advice would you give them? And I told them two things. I mean, there's a lot to be said about it. I mean, you could have an entire weekend seminar on this, mm-hmm. but I was like, you know, start small. We've seen handfuls of people come in and say that, oh, I'm going to open up my own facility, 10,000 square feet, 15,000 square feet. And I want to be like, how many clients do you have that you're going to be able to pay rent? people, they get their eyes, or they flash really big, and they kind of overstep their bounds, but always start small. And if you can, get a business person involved that can run a business. You know, it's kind of tough to do everything on your own, whether it's scheduling, billing, cleaning. And then on top of that, you have to have right programs and coach. Like, it just gets to be a lot. So if you can get somebody to help run the business side of things, that helps too. But number one would be definitely to start small.
Well, let's kind of get into it today. We have a couple topics to jump into, and I know we can get a little bit of a discussion going about a topic that Tony wrote about. And this is from Dave Morgan Owen from Facebook. Tony wrote a pretty cool article regarding breathing and its potential training implications. I'd be interested to hear more on that. And on that pre-show, John said he had some input on this as well, and I'm kind of interested to hear both your guys' takes on this. And I think from when talking to John, I think Tony let's just get it going. Round one, Tony versus John. Tony, go.
This isn't even Tony versus John. Like, I'm sure we're going to agree on everything, and John's going to be more of an expert on this than me, but this is something that we've instituted or implemented into our programming a lot, or at least being more cognizant of at the facility within the past year and a half. It's just people have really, really shitty breathing mechanics, and we tend to be chest breathers. You know, the diaphragm doesn't come into play a lot, and I'm getting more in the mindset of getting more of like a 360 degree expansion. So not just thinking about pushing the stomach out and belly breathing that way, but getting more of a lateral and posterior component in there too. And if you look into a lot of the Postural Restoration Institute, the DNS, a lot of the stuff we're doing is off the stuff they've done. I mean, those are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people. And I'm just scratching the surface of all this, and as is Eric. But what we've seen is just, you know, we as human beings are inherently asymmetrical. Like, you're never going to find symmetry. You know, you have a liver on one side, you know, heart on the other, you know, three lobes of on one side of the lungs, two on the other. So we're inherently asymmetrical, and that's affecting how we stand. And then when you factor in breathing patterns and people becoming more chest breathers and how it affects the thoracolumbar junction, you know, we get these gross extension patterns. Because one thing that I've noticed that, you know, we've talked a lot about the facility is we've always coached and cued the chest up, shoulder blades down and back. And I think it's gotten to the point where we've overcoached that, which makes the breathing patterns even harder, and we get that gross extension pattern. I'm sure John can expound on this a little bit more. So we're actually looking into that a little bit more and focusing on even the beginning of any training day, just trying to work on one's breathing patterns, whether they're doing baby pose or alligator belly breathing. And these are drills that I've written about. Strength coach Jim Laird's written about. There's a lot of people that have been writing about it, but that's just like scratching the surface type stuff. But it's definitely an important component of what we're looking at as of late, and I think it's going to have profound effects in how we write programming and how we help improve performance moving forward.
So I'm not convinced of any of it yet, although I don't. I see both sides, and I can see why it might be important, but I also see why it may not. When I first came across this, it was probably like a year, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you know, whenever it became like the new hotness and people start talking about breathing. And one of the questions that occurred to me was if this is true, then we should see more pain patterns in people like asthmatics, mm-hmm. because asthmatics by definition are upper chest breathers, and they're very excessive upper chest breathers. So if you're talking about trying to study a population that has this type of dysfunction, then an asthmatic would be an excellent population to study, because they'd be an accelerated version of that. And you could probably see the changes that you're looking for more quickly in an asthmatic than just someone that's an upper chest breather. Because let's be honest, just about everyone in the population is an upper chest breather. So, and more on that in a moment. So I did a search on it. I found two studies. There may be more, but these were the two that came up for me. One of them was the journal, because I pulled them up. It was in Spine, actually, which is a very good journal. It was in 2004, Comorbidity with Low Back Pain, a cross-sectional population-based survey of 12 to 22-year-olds. So you're talking about young adults
and they did find a correlation with asthmatics for low back pain. So you go, okay, this is – maybe we're onto something, because they found that there was a significant increase in reports of low back pain from asthmatics in that population. What was interesting, though, is that they did not find that same problem with other allergy sufferers like hay fever. And that sort of makes you wonder why, because you would assume, well, if asthmatics are having this pain, why wouldn't anyone that has a very similar type of breathing pattern, you know, from an allergy situation have the same effect? But maybe you could reason that asthmatics are possibly year-round, where hay fever may be seasonal. So maybe there are reasons for that. The other study, though, that I found was the American Journal of Epidemiology, and it was a cross-sectional associations of asthma, hay fever, and other allergies with major depression and low back pain among adults aged 20 to 39 years in the United States. So this one, you're not quite in the same populations, but there's a slight crossover at the beginning of this one and the end of the other one. But what they found was very interesting, and what they looked at is, again, there was this association between asthmatics and low back pain. So that's good. They found similar results, and now you can start to look at the research and say, all right, they're finding the same things, and maybe there is something here. But the problem came in is that there was also a correlation with depression. And so asthmatics are correlated with low back pain, but they're also correlated with depression. And we know that depression increases incidence of low back pain and reports of low back pain, the intensities. And that is very well established in the research as far as what your mood, what stress, depression, and all of these things do to reports of pain. And we know that low back pain does occur greater in those types of populations. You can look into a lot of different things. The authors of that study were talking about increased inflammatory markers and cytokines as a possible physiological basis. We also know that because of the way that the brain works and how it interprets pain, when we're depressed, when we're anxious and we have high anxiety, those type of pain signals are increased, and we interpret those signals with greater intensity than they might otherwise be. So that's a big problem, because if asthma increases the risk of depression, and we don't think it's the other way around, we don't think depression causes asthma, then we don't really know if the back pain really has any true strong correlation to asthma, or if it's just because of its association with depression. So in other words, I might fix someone's asthma and not fix their back pain because it was actually because of depression. And if they remain depressed, they'll maintain that back pain even though I've solved the mechanical basis. Asthma is different than a standard upper chest breather, so I can't claim that an asthmatic is an upper chest breather and an upper chest breather is an asthmatic, but it does at least raise the thought of possibly this isn't as significant as we're making it out to be. Because again, if an asthmatic has this all the time in an intense way, then why wouldn't it be causing the type of pain problems that we're claiming that normal upper chest breathing does? There's two ways that you can look at that, because again, I don't think that that's great science and it's not data necessarily for or against, but that's the problem. It's just not giving us anything really. But you could make the claims of the mechanics being altered, and it certainly makes sense. You know, upper chest breather, pec minor, serratus anterior, all this stuff is going on. They're in spasm, and now that spasm is causing us pain. And we see that in people that have pain. We see people with shoulder pain, and it's, you know, there's I don't think I've ever treated a shoulder that didn't have a pec minor in spasm or subscap in spasm, something along these lines. So it certainly, from a clinical observation, would seem to make sense. But on the other hand, when we think about breathing, it is truly the most vital thing that we do. If you stop breathing, you die. I mean, if I stop eating, I can live for a couple days. If I stop drinking, I can live for a little while. I can't live if I'm not breathing. So it is truly the most vital thing that we do, and therefore it would make sense that it could really cause a lot of problems if we do it wrong. But on the other hand, from a developmental point of view, from a evolutionary point of view, if we only had, you know, one or two different ways to back up our breathing, so if our breathing isn't efficient, and we fall back to the secondary method. And that method is so poor that it causes all other kinds of problems, all other kinds of orthopedic issues. That kind of doesn't make a lot of sense also. Because if it's such a vital thing where you assume that it would immediately be compensated for if something goes wrong, then how would we have survived? You know, we would be breaking down constantly. And again, how many people truly breathe diaphragmatically, breathe properly? I don't think that there are too many in the general population. It just doesn't seem to be. So, and again, a lot of people have orthopedic problems, so I can't claim that this isn't happening, but I don't know that I have good evidence to suggest that it is either. And it may just be a lot of wishful thinking and a lot of things that may make a lot of mechanical sense, but mechanics are iffy that way, and they don't always end up, you know, in the injury cycle that we think that it does. Now, if someone walks in with injury or someone walks in with pain, I don't have a problem pursuing this. And I have absolutely worked with individuals and gone through breathing with them because I think it's worthwhile to approach it. It's a minute or two at best. So you cross off that part because why not? There's certainly, you know, going back thousands of years, martial arts and meditation, yoga, everything has to do with the breathing. So it's not that it's unlikely that this is important, but I just don't know when it's actually important. And I don't know that it's important for someone that isn't having these types of issues.
And I agree, John. Like, I agree on all accounts. And like you said, mm-hmm. this isn't something that we're spending 30 minutes on every session. And I'm certainly doing it on more of a case-by-case basis. Because yeah. like someone comes in with shoulder pain, you know, we're going to look at the shoulder, obviously. We're going to look at scapular function. We're going to look at glenohumeral range of motion. We're going to look at, you know, technique. We're going to look at programming faults. We're going to look at, you know, acromion type, you know, if they have an X-ray or an MRI available. I mean, there's a lot of other factors that we're looking into. But if everyone's doing if all that stuff is coming back, then they are doing scapular stability and they do have good glenohumeral range of motion, at least on the non-affected side. Breathing patterns is something that we've been looking into. And like mm-hmm. you said, it's something that we might spend 1 or 2 minutes on. They might be there for an hour, hour and a half. And we're not going into super duper corrective mode because we aren't manual therapists and we're not physical therapists. You know, I'm there to get people stronger. I'm there to help improve their performance. You know, and this is just stuff that we're just scratching the surface on, and I don't want to make it seem like, you know, we're spending 30 minutes on working on these cute little breathing patterns, and we're working on the left rib flare, you know, we're working on zone of apposition, getting the diaphragm, you know, functioning. No, like we're gonna go deadlift, we're gonna go get strong, you know, and it is definitely a case by case matter, and I've seen it work. Like I've seen guys come in with not great glenohumeral internal range of motion, particularly with the population we're working with baseball players. And I've seen where we do, you know, 2 minutes of breathing drills, work on that left rib flare, and we're getting an additional, you know, 5 degrees of internal range of motion. You know, right. Certainly it's only temporary. It's not like we maintain it, but it just goes to show that it comes into play to a degree. And, you know, I know earlier I said this is going to have profound effects on how we program. You know, that might have been a little bit of an overstatement because it's definitely not something that, you know, we're spending, you know, 20, 30, 40 minutes on every session. And we're certainly not doing it with everybody. But there's a lot of smart people out there, smarter than myself, that are looking into it. And I was like, oh, why not? I'll look into it. And a lot of it makes sense, but we're certainly not taking it to the degree where we're actually treating people. Right. You know, we're throwing in exercises that and drills that we found work. And, you know, and I want to say, even from the Posture Restoration Institute, and there's hundreds of drills that they do, like we use maybe 5 that we found that's applicable to the population that we deal with. And, you know, so I couldn't agree with you more. Like, I understand that, you know, when we talk about, you know, grown adults going back to working on patterns, you know, infant patterns and stuff like that, like, I think it's a little voodoo-y. Like, I'm like, okay, like, I get it. And, you know, yeah, it's a new flavor of the month in the fitness industry. But at the same time, it's like, okay, let's get people strong. Let's get them performing well.
Right.
You know, and that's going to fix a lot of stuff too. So, you know, I think we agree on it. Like you're a little bit more well-versed in this than me. And I agree with what you're saying. But I certainly think there. I mean, I think you agree that there is some validity, and it's definitely on a case by case basis.
Well, I think the discussion between the two just puts on display kind of where you're coming at in this whole discussion, mm-hmm. where you're coming from with the populations that you're dealing with, and kind of where you are in terms of your job and your responsibilities with those people. Yeah. Kind of just carrying over. I mean, the same conversation has come up at MBSC multiple times. And I think the biggest benefit that we can possibly take out of this discussion is, you know what, for some people out there that, I mean, again, I was kind of really lucky to intern at Cressy's, and you guys taught me to, you know, keep my stomach tight and to like breathe in through my stomach before deadlifting and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and before benching, and it paid off huge. And I just don't think that's, you know, necessarily saying that this belly breathing is going to be something that's going to be life changing, but I think teaching mm-hmm. it to people is still beneficial to help them acquire proper form before going into a heavy lift, and making sure. And this is huge with the younger athletes as well. And Tony, I know you've probably seen this too. I mean, the biggest thing that we have with our younger athletes is that they just have problems keeping proper postural alignment when they're in motion or they try to move anything. And mm-hmm. when you teach them to breathe in through their stomach, hold that before they go into any kind of active, you know, range of motion, active movement, it basically forces them to stay stable and, you know, whatever, fire their core and make sure that when they bend over, they don't get, you know, just straight up lumbar flexion. Like, they get actual movement with proper, spinal alignment. Again, I just think it's you kind of have to pick and choose what you're going to use this discussion for.
Sure.
And I think, John, I think it's super cool that you came out of it and at, you know, the aspect of PT. Like, I think that mm-hmm. is a great side to hit on. And again, Tony's almost on the opposite end when it's, you know, and yeah. same thing with myself, like dealing with athletes and dealing with everyday people where we're just like, all right, we're just going to take like a little bit of all this stuff that we hear about, and we're going to see if we can implement it in our programming and see if we can get some benefit from it. Even if it's hocus pocus, if we get some benefit from it, shit, we're going to keep it in.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's not the first thing we're looking at all. Like, I mean, we're looking at so many other things first.
Exactly.
You know? And this is just some, this might be like, you know, definitely down the ladder, but it is something that we're starting to implement more and more. And it, not to the degree where it's taking up a big, huge of that pie that we're looking at. If we're looking at, we have somebody for an hour, this is a very minuscule portion of that pie that we're looking at. And, you know, we've seen it work with quite a few individuals, and for others, it's like, you know, not really. Let's move
right.
on.
And I think that's the good point. And I deal with stuff like that in the same way. I think that this stuff that's a little bit more, it's unproven, it's theory, it's whatever. I think that's the stuff, you know, for me, as a clinical guideline, if I'm dealing with someone in pain or I'm dealing with someone that just can't hold, you know, the range of motion increase or whatever it is, you know, you fix them one day and the next day they come back and it's the same pain again, then clearly there's something there that's holding them back. You did something that seemed right and then it went wrong. And that's when stuff like this is a little bit more appealing to me, because if I've got a shoulder issue, I've got a neck issue, I've got, you know, whatever, and it seems like they're good when they're leaving and they're coming back and they're about 50% of it is back and you're expecting that not to occur, then you've got to find these little details, like possibly the breathing, that may be encouraging that spasm to reoccur, or that position or that posture that you think is part of the problem to reoccur, you know. And I think that a big difference and a big part of the problem in the field in a lot of these cases are the things that fix someone are not always the things that got them that way in the first place. And I think that people misunderstand that, and they think that if they hear a PT or someone, you know, like the good stuff that you guys do at Cressy's with this, you know, performance enhancement and getting people to move better and to feel better and to be more athletic, they take those fixes and assume that if they stop them in the first place, then they'll be ahead of the game. You know, it's like that prehab concept. And I'm not sure that prehab really does anything. Mm-hmm. You know, because even there's a study, and I haven't read it yet. I want to take a look at it. It's sitting on my computer, but it's a study that was just looking at preseason performance, like strength and all types of physical, you know, running them through physicals and stuff like that as predicting injury, and they found that it didn't. The stronger people, which is a little bit counterintuitive and it's a little bit controversial. That's why I want to read the study. But they found that it didn't have a correlation. The only thing that could predict injury was your sex, if you were male or female, and the type of sport you were playing. And it's an interesting observation. And whether or not that study ends up being a quality study, it does kind of raise a point where if I'm increasing performance, then my body is capable of dealing with greater forces, greater, you know, activity, whatever. But then I'm also producing greater forces and greater activity. And in the end, it may be a wash, you know, especially when we deal with athletic populations. For the general population, that may not be the case, because just because I'm stronger doesn't mean that I fly up the stairs or something like that. You know, my daily activities may be, you know, improved in that sense, because I'm not the forces that I'm dealing with on a daily basis are not changing. So an increase in performance and in strength and speed and power will actually make that better, because I'll have a greater amount to use. But it doesn't mean necessarily that when we're dealing with performance that those prehab and those prefixes actually do anything to prevent injury and to prevent problems from occurring. So stuff like this, it's interesting to me because of that, because we're looking at these as a basis to increase performance and to decrease pain, but does it necessarily work the other way to stop injury before it happens? And that, I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot that's unpredictable. I mean, you can't predict an ACL injury for the most. I mean, if it's a contact injury, it's a contact injury. You know, like
right.
But I mean, it's a great point. I'll have to look at that study as well. But I mean, and we're not taking the pre-work to the extreme either. I mean, you got one camp that I just think a big mistake that a lot of trainers make is they get too corrective. You know, and mm-hmm. I think you'll agree with that. Like, I just think, you know, people take it to the degree, like, yeah, someone moves like crap, and you know, you can find 18 things that are wrong with them, and then they're getting so much into the nitty gritty that they're looking at dorsiflexion of the big toe, and
right.
I'm like, really? Like, I mean, come on, the guy's 50 pounds overweight. Like, let's work on the big rocks first before we start getting to the point where we're looking at, you know, the minutia.
Enough. The title of John's first episode on the podcast.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, big rocks.
Ah, all right. Well, it's just like, I just think, you know, even with programmed anything, it's like people they're painting the walls before they have the foundation. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, we got to, you know, with the corrective stuff, I mean, I could go on and on about that. I just think people take that to the nth degree, and it's
all right.
It's frustrating.
Let's talk about something else since we're like 25 minutes into that discussion. So,
Just as the audience was getting interested.
Yeah, as you're just like, oh crap, let's talk more about breathing.
By the way, Tony, it was in sports medicine, arthroscopy, rehabilitation and therapy and technology. It's, can preseason fitness measures predict time to injury in varsity athletes, a retrospective case control? So it was time to injury, which is also interesting.
Sorry about that. There's a loud car outside.
Are you sure that wasn't like a fart?
That was just so there's, I'm in the city. Wait, I can't, there's just some, my bad.
that part in the off topic.
No, that's, I don't know what, rewind, hit that 30 second rewind button on your iPhone, folks. That was that might just have to be a little bit of review there. So all right. Hey, you guys ever try kombucha?
I have no idea what that is.
They actually have it at Raw Foods, or Whole Foods. And it's an awesome drink that I drink up, like, you know, usually one a day. I like to go to Whole Foods and get a couple during the week, and it's great. It's got tons of probiotics and lots of great stuff in there, and they actually taste pretty good, although it smells like vinegar, and it makes you feel a little lightheaded when you drink it, because it kind of has it's fermented.
But you get it at Whole Foods, you said?
Yeah, you can get it at Whole Foods. The interesting thing is that like I was in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, and in Orlando you have to be over 21 to buy this stuff.
Oh man.
But not in Massachusetts, again, because it's fermented, and I don't think you can get drunk off this stuff, but every time I drink it, I start feeling a little, you know, like I like just had a couple beers. But it's really good for you, supposedly, and it tastes pretty all right. And you can, the kind I drink is organic raw kombucha, multi-green. And it's, next time you're at Whole Foods, Tony, check it out. It's like in that huge section with all the different beverages and stuff.
Okay. I'll check it out. Like lately, I've been rocking, Athletic Greens quite a bit.
Pushing the Athletic Greens, huh?
I like it. I just put a scoop in the water and it's good to go. What I like about it is just there's prebiotics in it, amongst other stuff too. But I still have my superfood and all that stuff as well. But you know, I've been, as far as lately, what I've been using quite a bit is Athletic Greens.
Cool.
Have you tried it?
I have not tried it because I have not been put onto the Athletic Greens bandwagon. I use stuff from Amazing Grass Raw Reserve. I use that instead. Gotcha. And again, that's something I get at Whole Foods and it's pretty dope. So I do get in my greens every day. And do you do the wheatgrass?
No, I do not.
Wheatgrass is the next step, my friend. If you want to get some more green powder stuff that you have to choke down every day. All right, let's continue to go on. All right, we can take this one. Recently, it seems there's been a huge influx of fitness gurus on Facebook, Twitter, etc. Do you guys have any way to filter out the good voices from the bad? That's from Brad D.
Oh, boy.
Without naming names.
Who wants to go first?
Hey, man, you're the guest.
I mean, it's Facebook. You can block anyone you want.
Yeah, but I think it, you know.
Yeah, but how to evaluate if they're block worthy?
I mean the thing is like Twitter and Facebook, they're such powerful social media entities that I'd be lying if I said I don't use it. Like when I put a blog up, like I put it on Facebook, I put it on Twitter. You know, as far as like how to weed them out, I mean, I don't know. I mean, good content is good content. I don't understand how. I mean, if you got to click on it, the link to read their content and see if it's good, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Outside of that, I don't know how else you can weed them out. But, people want to get their names out there. I mean, it's good and it's bad. I mean, it's good in the sense that we have access to all this information. There's a lot of people that I've never heard of before that I click on something, I like it. Sometimes I actually put it on my blog as my stuff you should read list. You know, and it's bad because you get a lot of people that, you know, they have a YouTube page or they have a blog and they're spouting out all this information, whether it's right or wrong could be debatable, but they don't really train anyone, you know, which to me is a little hard to digest. Like it's hard for me to take advice from somebody who doesn't train anyone. I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with me on that. That's just how I feel.
No, I think that's the way to look at it. Make sure you can see references to where they actually work. If they don't list a, you know, a place of employment, and they just say like, I work for, I'm self-employed and I work for, you know, John Smith Fitness, and there's no actual John Smith Fitness facility. It's just some dude who, you know, copies stuff off of T-Nation and then, you know, is strong.
Well, sure. I think what rubs people the wrong way is you get those people who all they do is self-market themselves. It's like marketing, 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 marketing. That gets a little bit annoying. You get people who all they do is sell something. That can get a little bit annoying. You know, and then you just get people who just put flat out bad content. But, I mean, I'd be lying. If I had Facebook and Twitter back when I first started, I mean, I would have used it.
Yeah.
I mean, people have to get their name out there some way. I just think it comes down to personal preference as far as like what you view as intrusive or annoying. But to me the litmus test is, you know, do they actually train people? And then from there I can, you know, I'll read the content. If I like it, great. Because I always want to read what other people are doing and what they think. And you know, I'm not that much of a pompous ass that I can't take advice from people who aren't as well known as me. Like that's just dumb.
I think the only thing people need to run into is you know, when you do find someone who you, I mean, I think first off you have to like what they're selling, and what I mean by that is what they're writing about. If it's something that interests you and you're like, oh yeah, no, I think that type of training is really cool and that's something I'd like to do, that's awesome. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. Always keep in mind, is this going to be, how applicable is this going to be for me? And the only thing I can kind of point out to is sometimes when you you look at some programs where, you know, potentially the people that write them could be medically assisted with their possible results. I think that's something that you should kind of keep in mind. And I still think it's an issue of people getting programs on the internet, trying to do them and almost falling apart because it's 50 or 75% more volume than they should be doing. And I think that's the one of the bigger things that we've kind of got away from the last couple of years is that I think people for years were just doing too much volume because they were finding, you know, programs that they were not ready for. And again, the last thing I can really say about that is just make sure that you have a context for everything that they're saying, everything that they're doing, and if it's applicable to you in your goals and your current abilities and lifestyle.
Well said, Kevin.
What I'm going to weigh in on this is, I think what this question really boils down to is, how do we define an expert? And if the internet doesn't allow us to, you know, if everyone has a fancy website or a Facebook page and they're saying a bunch of stuff, how do we determine whose stuff we need to listen to? So I think the most important thing to remember is that an expert is a low form of evidence. I mean, if we're trying to build our knowledge base and all we're doing is reading people's Facebooks or their blogs, we're really not building a very strong body of evidence, and we're not building a strong personal knowledge base, because these are biased opinions. These are unscientific findings, you know, that people are reporting. It's important to listen to someone because science clearly does not give us even remotely all the answers. But, you know, I remember there was a couple weeks, months ago or something, on Mark Young's Facebook page. This is the second Mark Young reference in this podcast, mind you, where he wrote, you know, where do you get your information from? And there was something like 30 replies. And I, you know, pompously replied PubMed, because that's where I go for information. I go to Google Scholar and PubMed. And, you know, if I want an answer, a question answered, that's where I go, to the studies, to the research. I was the only person. He actually messaged me. He's like, do you know you're the only person that mentioned any type of primary source? Because everyone else was this blog and that blog and this guru. And
the problem is, you're a professional and everyone else that replied probably isn't a professional.
Right, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't educate people on how to get better information.
Yeah, well, what's his name? It's a great book, our book out, like an ebook on how to read research.
Right. Mark Young has How to Read Research.
Oh, yeah, it's Mark Young.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I think it's great. Number three. Yeah. So but I just wanted to make that point because I think that's important, because if we're talking about, well, how do I differentiate the experts on Facebook? Who the hell cares? They're experts on Facebook. You know, that's kind of the bottom line to me. But I do think it's a legitimate question. It's not to belittle it, because it's a legitimate question. How do we determine experts? And an expert should have, obviously, it's someone with expertise, but expertise is acquired. It's not something that, I mean, we can have very smart people that, like you guys are saying, have no experience. And we can have people that are really experienced that it's not really worth much because they don't know what they're doing. So we assume that expertise comes with a certain level of knowledge. Probably it was some combination of scholastic achievement. You know, they went to school for this. They studied, they whatever, and they also got a lot of, you know, real world, so to speak, experience. They were able to apply their knowledge. They were able to change, you know, to adapt to situations and to really build this career that not only do they have something to share, but probably the most important thing from my definition, because there are a lot of definitions of expert, but is that their peers accept them as an expert too. You know, so if you're dealing with someone on Facebook and they're making these great posts, but no one else seems to know who this guy is or this girl is, and no one's really sharing what they're saying, and no one really cares what they have to say, even though it may appeal to you, you have to wonder why it doesn't seem like it appeals to anyone else.
Yeah, but I think
else,
there's just a bigger problem with people sharing stuff, the people who don't know what they're talking about or don't have the context to actually.
Right, but again, peers, like, you know, I you know, we were talking, you and I were in another podcast. I said something about appealing to authority, you know, when you were saying, well, these guys think that this is good stuff, so I'm going to agree with it. And, you know, to paraphrase, but there is a certain point that when we look at experts, there is an appeal to authority, because I know if you know, why did I start, you know, learning about Shirley Sarman? Because my professors in grad school were talking to me about Shirley Sarman. They were experts, and they felt that Shirley Sarman was their expert. So I looked into it because that's clearly an indication that maybe this is something that I should know. But so it's not just a matter of, like, you know, asking your buddies in the gym, oh, who do you read? It's a matter of looking at the people in the field that you might respect. Like, again, you know, Bill Hartman and you know, guys that I studied with. So if Bill's telling me that he really likes so-and-so's work, I might consider that person a little bit higher, or at least enough to then investigate what those people are saying, because someone that I think has a great deal of experience in the field, a great deal of knowledge, went to school for this, learned on his own, and he thinks that someone else has something worthwhile to say, I'd be more interested in listening. You know, there's a reason why people ask us, you know, oh, what blogs do you read and whatever, because they feel that we know more than they do. So they're interested to know who we feel has something to share. That's a lot to do with an expert too, you know. But again, it's not a vital component, but I think that sort of goes into what you guys were saying also, where it's like, you know, have they been in the field? Do they train people? And therefore, have they made a reputation for themselves? And is that reputation based on merit? Is that reputation based on results and based on knowledge and experience and all these other things? You kind of – it's like how it was described – pornography was described in the original hearings in Congress. They said, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. I think an expert is kind of the same way. You know an expert when you see it, because they clearly have an understanding and experience that you don't. And again, going back to like the research, what they're saying doesn't contradict research, because to me that's a big deal too. When I read someone on Facebook and they say something and I look at that and I go, okay, that's not true, then I'm clearly not going to be very interested in what the next thing they had to say. But if someone always seems to, you know, kind of have an idea of not only what's out there, but why what they're saying may fit into that, I'm more interested in what they have to say, because I know that they're not trying to sell me something. You know, someone that's claiming to have the answers is trying to sell you something. Yeah, showing you where the answers are is probably not trying to sell you something.
I mean, really, you can just summarize by saying, be leery of people that call themselves an expert.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I don't call myself an expert in anything other than maybe Star Wars, but
right.
You know, I'm a geek like that. But I would just be leery of anyone that just goes on and on and on about how much they're an expert on whatever, fat loss, being awesome, whatever. You know, I would just be leery of that too.
All right, I think we're gonna wrap it up there. We've been talking for almost 2 hours, and of course, there was a lot of catching up that we did. But
scenes chat.
What's that?
So we did a lot of behind the scenes catching up.
Yeah, you know, we did what we needed to do and we did it. So the way I'm going to wrap this up is to not forget to remember that Tony is not at the Step Up blog anymore. He's at TonyGentleCord.com. He's got a fat website, PHAT website.
Yeah. Like years.
Man, can I just say, like, yeah, it's doing well, but man, that brought it back some memories talking about Step Up. I haven't heard about that.
Boston Herald Step Up blog.
I think it still exists, to be honest with you.
Yeah, don't even give them clicks. Come on, go to
TonyGentleCord.com.
Yeah, go to TonyGentleCord.com. He's got a nice pick up on the upper right-hand side for the ladies. And I'm surprised you didn't go with the arms over barbell look.
No, Eric already did that. I got played out.
Yeah, you broke the mold, man. It's good.
Crossed arm. get my biceps going.
But I'm smiling, so I feel like I should have done like the non-smiling, I'm a tough strength coach look, but I don't want to scare off too many people.
Fair enough. You can also, John doesn't do anything, but you can follow him on Facebook because he spends about 40 hours a week on Facebook posting pictures of the Olympics and biking in the middle of streets with the Prince.
Hey. Yep, Sean and Lise.
And again, don't forget to check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe over there. You can go to thefitcast.com. That's a great place to go to submit mailbag questions. And don't forget, come on, guys, you got to send in those mailbag questions often. If you have a question you want to ask us, shoot it in there. We'll hit it up. I don't know why I'm talking like this right now. It's the kombucha. I was drinking kombucha while we were going. So check all that stuff out. And I already said subscribe through iTunes. Check out thefitcast.com. You can follow me at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. And Tony's at twitter.com/TGeneralCore18.
Yeah, because there's already a Tony Gentilcore that took it, so I had to go Tony Gentilcore 1, like the number one.
That works.
Yeah.
Because he's number one. And that's it. Thanks for listening this week. Hope you guys enjoy the 20-plus minute off-topic discussion where we go into graphic detail about new headphones, what Tony's been watching for movies, the issue with Batman. Oh, we didn't talk about Batman. I'm kidding. All right, great. Have a nice week. Welcome to the Off Topic. I am joined by Lee Peel and Dr. Jonathan Fass. Excuse me. We're
I don't know. Excuse us.
Yeah. Now we're back to together again to talk about some off-topic stuff. We will say off the bat, there will be no Batman talk because I haven't seen it.
Exactly. Thank you.
You haven't seen it either.
Thank you. No, and I won't see it for like an effing month.
Yeah, dude. I got a job, yo. Although I got
another country that doesn't allow movie theaters, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it either. I just saw Spider-Man. So.
That was all right.
Oh, God. How good was that?
John Romanello hated it.
I loved it. I fucking loved it.
Well, John Romanello is wrong.
Well, he kind of nerded. He went like, he had this laundry list of reasons.
Is he some sort of Marvel purist or something like that?
I guess so. Yeah. And
see, but that's crap because I am too, and I loved it. First, yeah, okay,
dude, I just I'm pissed sorry. Off that Jed Bartlett
I
died
thought
again.
That he, I thought that it was a lot more. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm not a purist at all. I just, you know, basically, it was Emma Stone was my biggest reason. But
what's up with those socks?
You had a problem with them?
I think those socks are weird.
Are you not like a heterosexual male under the age of 30 in America? Because I'm not understanding why you had a problem with those socks.
No, I'm good. Sorry. I just like I just figured like how can those socks be comfortable? I feel like her legs.
No, I don't know how they'd be comfortable, but yeah.
Not only did she look banging, but she was completely prepared for CrossFit.
Well, I'm just I heard that it was more true to the thing. Like he made the webs, you know, the devices instead of it just coming out like in the Token Bar things. Like there are certain things that are supposed to be more true to the book, I thought.
It basically was, and they also the mood. See, the only thing that really really, I mean, obviously they took some liberties, but the biggest difference was the fact that he wasn't that classical nerd that Peter Parker was. He was more like the brooding, moody kid. But they've redone Spider-Man. They have like a new book out that basically it's kind of like remastered for like modern readers because the original Spider-Man's going back since like the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. They kind of redid it, and they redid it according to that sort of style. So it was actually very... It followed that book very closely. It didn't follow the original Spider-Man quite as closely. Like the first three movies was more like what the Peter Parker was like in the original comic books, where he's just a nerd. But this one was, I felt it made for a much better character. You know, and then it became more about Peter Parker as Spider-Man.
I kind of like the brooding hipster nerd instead of the like mathlete nerd aspect.
Yeah, and it...
Do you know what I mean? I like that better.
In a modern kind of context, that makes a little bit more sense. I mean, the kid loses his parents and blah, blah, blah. And you just sort of – it to me, that made more sense. I actually liked that take on it. And I haven't read those books because it's been many years since I've read comics books. But Spider-Man was my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that take on it. I thought it was a very interesting look. And everything else was the same. Like, it was far more, you know – with Gwen, with you know, a lot of those things were what the original comics did. You know, MJ didn't show up till much later. So I was a fan, and he nailed the performance. Nailed it.
I liked it.
I thought that my only problem was he was kind of a bitch.
How so?
The way he kind of like complained to Uncle Ben and stuff, he was kind of a bitch. So that was the only thing that kind of like rubbed me the wrong way.
I don't know. I kind of got the impression more that he was repressed, like that he hadn't really bothered to bring it up and it kind of was coming out. Am I the only one that got that impression? I kind of got the impression that it was just like, you know what?
They rushed the shit out of it. Like the whole backstory of that movie was supposed to be about, oh, it's Peter's father.
Right.
Well, the problem is they cut a bunch of stuff out that was originally supposed to be in there, so it comes off somewhat weird when they just show a friggin' montage of his parents dying. Like, oh shit, his parents died? What? Yeah, I didn't know that.
No, well, it wasn't even necessary. I agree with that, because if you look at... we probably read the same article too, honestly. Like, but if you look at the... what's it called? There was... like the commercials, and there were entire like lines of dialogue that weren't in the movie. And the commercials made it seem like there was this big conspiracy, and his father had something to do with a lot of what was going on. And the movie didn't give us that. And you presume that it's because they saw the end product and said, no, we need stuff for part two. Mm. You know, but that's what it seemed like. And I agree with that part. That I didn't really pay notice to it in the movie. But looking back on it, I think that's a fair criticism.
I still like walked out of it, and you know, I enjoyed it, and the person I went to see it with enjoyed it. So it's
yeah.
I mean, it's a fun movie.
You guys take this stuff so seriously. I just like the movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the best movies that I've seen in a while.
If there's a comic book, I will not go to a movie theater with someone that has read the comics of these movies. Just, I can't do it.
One issue 13 of volume 4.
Yeah, right.
Seriously.
Clearly, they made compromises to sex up her character. We all know that guy.
And he's going to be on
I'm
later.
I'm not. Oh, yeah. I feel like
that's right, Tony. You should be here talking off topic.
Yeah,
now,
your fault.
Bitch, I called you out, and you won't even know it until this is released.
Well, you know the one of the things that I was watching like a couple weeks ago. that I was getting on Amazon was Sucker Punch. And I got like 20 minutes into it before I had to stop watching it because it just wasn't holding on to me. And I figured like that's one of those movies like Tony would come and be like, oh no, it's so artistic. And the film noir, I'm sure he'd say film noir.
Very interested on the new Superman, Man of Steel.
I don't think so. I don't think they got it. Superman is the worst superhero ever. He's so boring.
That's controversial. But same thing, they reimagined Superman that's also following a comic book. There's precedence for what they're doing there too.
Sure, but Superman is the problem is he's invincible against everything besides kryptonite, its various colors, and magic. And I don't know, it's just there isn't much tension in a superhero Superman movie. It's just not a character like you go to see Spider-Man, you can kind of connect with Spider-Man.
But that's the difference in the characters. I mean, that's what made Marvel Comics and the early Marvel Comics and Stan Lee such a genius, because all of those characters,
they're humans,
were basically characters, right, that you could relate to. I mean, I remember very specifically reading Spider-Man books where he had a cold and he would be sneezing while he fought someone, and it was just like crazy stuff like that where you're like, oh, that's so weird, you know, and that would affect the way he fought and stuff like that. Superman comes from another era of comic book writing. I mean, he is the superhero that can't be defeated, although he kind of was a few times. I mean, it's not, you know, it's just a different sort of thing. But even Batman, like the original Batman versus the darker versus the lighter, I mean, it's going through so many different looks. I mean, we had the cheesy, campy 60s Batman, too. You know what I mean? So it's all – there are a lot of different ways that you can look at these characters. And you could look at Superman as a very interesting character because you're dealing with someone that's invincible, basically. And what's that – you know, so you can go into the character of who, you know, Clark Kent is, and what – how does he exist as an alien – on a planet. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of stuff that can make that movie really good. I mean, that's kind of what Bryan Singer tried to do, except he just ended up making him like an emo, and then it didn't really work so great. But that character can be really deep.
Super deep?
No, I don't know.
I bought some new headphones today. Lee recommended some headphones about a year and a half ago to me. I decided to go against her recommendation and bought some Audio-Technica ATH50s, which up until this point I've been kind of happy with, but they hurt my ears a little bit and they squeeze the shit out of my head because I have a big head. And I do. So I went with some Dynamic, yeah, I think that's it. DT770 Pros, and it's the first headphone I've ever bought that I actually have to amp. Like, you can't just plug it into a computer. You'll barely be able to hear anything. I have to, luckily, I already had an amp, like a portable USB amp.
Yeah, those are the real deal.
Yeah, they're nice, and they're even the kind of, if you want to get into this a little bit, the problem when I do anything like this is I do exhaustive research and I end up becoming a mild expert on like what I'm going to buy. But the problem with this is that there's like
a mild expert.
Yeah. Like there's a 80 ohm version. I think there's a 80 ohm, like a 100 something, and then a 250, and like the 250 you'd need to amp the hell out of. But the 80s are the lowest version that they sell, and they are super comfortable. Like, it feels, it's like really comfortable earmuffs on your head, and the sound is outstanding out of the box, which you usually don't get. You usually have to break these things in for like 50 hours, 100 hours. But the sound is great, and for music and for games, so I'm very happy with the purchase, and I can now pass my other pair down onto someone else.
Hmm. By the way, you know we lost Lee, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I heard the Skype hang up. I think she was offended by the fact that you didn't listen to her.
That's weird. I don't know how to call her back necessarily on here.
And now she's offline.
All right. Well, Lee does live in the dirty South, where their internet is not so great.
Internet and running water.
Yeah, but looks like we can add in Tony Gentilcore to keep this party going. Let me see if I can pull this sumbitch up.
That's what she said. That's what she said.
What?
That's what she said.
What?
I don't forget it.
All right, so we're ringing in Tony. Let's see if this works. He's probably not picking up because he has to. Hey, Tony.
Hey, what's up?
Are you calling John?
No, he just called me, and then I answered it, and then it's still doing that.
Okay, hang up whatever's making that noise. All right, he just hung up on us. Great. We're doing good here so far in the off-topic discussion. John, what do you have going on?
Anything, nothing. I came back from the summer trip, and we went to Italy, which was awesome. We went to Turkey, and that was awesome. And now my dog's biting my hand. That's about it. That's what's going on.
You ever been to Constantinople?
No. No, we didn't go.
Lee, you back?
Podrum.
Yep, back.
Cool.
Hi, Lee.
Tony was on for a second, but I think his computer exploded.
Okay.
And he's back online. So I think that's all that I wanted to talk about. All right, Lee, what have you been doing besides work? What have you been doing that's not fitness related? Lee's not there anymore. Tony's back, though.
Hey, there we go. Is that better?
Yeah, are you using like a headset or are you using a...
I'm just talking into my computer. Does it sound like shit?
No, you sound good.
Yeah.
All right,
Tony, we're recording. We're mid-recording. So we're recording off-topic stuff. There will be no Batman discussion.
Okay. Is that even possible?
Well, I haven't seen Batman. Yeah. John hasn't seen Batman.
You don't want to give away any spoilers.
No, but right. for the listeners out there that remember your distinct taste in film, what have you been up to?
Oh, as far as movie watching or just in general?
And anything that doesn't have to do with fitness.
Oh, man. It's, I own a cat.
You bought a cat?
Well, Lisa, when was the last time I was on?
Like a year and a half. I don't know, a year ago?
Man, is it? I thought it was even longer than that.
I have no idea.
Well, Lisa and I bought a cat because when we moved in together, first of all, that's kind of big news.
It's kind of a big deal.
Over a year ago, so we've been together for 3 years. We moved in together last year, and when we moved into this place, we're in a great neighborhood in Boston. We love it, and everything's within walking distance. So I got Trader Joe's, the movie theater, the bookstore, Starbucks, the tea's right there. It was a great location, and the first. It's a huge apartment. Like we're paying nothing for this huge. It's a 2-bedroom apartment. Has a pantry. Has a patio. Full dining room. Full living room. It's right on the T. And so we kind of figured, okay, why are we paying such low rent for such a great spot? And then the first day we were in, saw a mouse. And Lisa hates mice. And I think within the first. Oh man! Within the first month of us living here, I think I killed like 8 mice. And
wow!
Yeah. So apparently,
that's really
the building.
Sad, by the way,
the building had some mice issue. So we said the hell with it. We're getting a cat. And when we got her, like we adopted her from a place that my business partner Pete he adopted 2 cats from this place. Cool. So we went to this place as well and got the cat. And she basically chose us. Like we walked in and there's like this. Woman's house, and she keeps everything in the cellar, and we named her Dagny, but she basically chose us, and it's been, I never thought I would be a cat person, but you know, I'm not scared to say it. I love my cat.
So is this like a hoarder's situation where you go into a house and there's 800 cats and 50 of them are dead?
No, they rescue the cats from hoarding situations. But it's not herself. It's not like I walked into a house that's full of, like, you know, 80 cats or anything. But It's a volunteer based company that, you know, basically rescues cats from hoarding situations or whatever. But we adopted her, and since we got her, we've had no mice. But the building itself is, there's a couple tenants that I guess weren't very clean at that left.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helped matters too. But so long story short, I have a cat. Still going to the movies quite a bit. Seen a lot. I just went to the movies this afternoon actually and saw an independent film that was okay. It was called
Tony, just so I can pause you for a second, do you mind going to the, like, it should be like a green check mark button next to your name. Can you just turn that to a red minus sign? Because we're getting the like the text sounds back from you. All right, thanks, man.
Is that better?
Yeah, just so we're not getting the feedback. Right, continue.
And then, so when going to the movies, I know we might talk about this in the actual podcast, but CP is expanding, so we're kind of excited about that. I've actually done a few speaking engagements this year, which was something at the start of the year I wanted to experiment with.
That's right.
So I've spoken in Edmonton and I've spoken in Toronto. We're actually going to be doing a Cressy Performance Seminar in September, and so I'll be speaking at that. And that's going pretty well. I mean, I don't think I suck, but it seems to be going well, and doing a lot of writing. And how are you guys doing? I haven't even talked to any of you guys in forever.
Literally forever. Well, I will say at this point, Lee will not be able to stay on with us. She lives in, like I said, the dirty South, where they have not procured solid internet access yet. The internet access wires are,
oh man,
bamboo and sugar cane. So
the fellas today,
just the dudes.
John, where are you right now?
Saudi Arabia.
Ah, so yeah, you're still out there then. How, you still liking it?
Beautiful downtown Riyadh.
Speaking of Saudi Arabia, I had some guy email me, I want to say maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, asking me if I'd ever be interested in moving out there.
Seriously?
It was, I forget what organization he said he worked for, but basically the gist of it was like, you know, they have all these fitness professionals out there that aren't quite educated, like they're very enthusiastic and they want to get better, but it's kind of lacking out there a little bit.
And yes.
It might be getting better real soon.
Yeah, so he was like, you know, he was trying to say, hey, you know, would you be interested? I know you guys are just opening, you know, you're involved with Cressy Performance and da da da, you know, but there's a lot of opportunity out here. Whether it's like
lots of cash too,
yeah, serving as like a consultant or, you know, flying out here from time to time or even moving out here. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa,
hold on a second. Like,
do you guys have a Whole Foods?
So, yeah, right? Have Trader Joe's out there.
I mean, talk to John about the trouble he's had to go through to get, like, food and stuff.
Yeah, is it pretty bad?
Oh, my God. It's literally a desert, Tony. It's literally a desert.
But you like it out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but it's not exactly America, so there's going to be some considerations to be made. I mean, it's not...
When he brought it up, I was like, you know, I was like, oh, well, what about this? What, I mean, I'm not moving out to Saudi Arabia. I was like,
no, kidding. Of course. Look, not.
I'm not leaving Boston. Like, no, of course not. I haven't come, like, I'm not leaving. And he was like, you know, it's safe out here. You know, I mean, he made it sound like it was, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there, obviously. But yeah, I'm not moving to Saudi Arabia.
No. And I do appreciate the fact that you passed on that business opportunity to me, you son of a bitch.
Oh, well, I figured, man, you're all over the place. I never know where you're...
Dickhead.
Are they associated with any gyms or anything like that?
I forget the company. You know, I'll go back in my email archives and I'll find it, and then I'll definitely I'll forward him your information, John.
Yeah. Oh, I think I know something that I know something that I can't go.
I will admit the brain fart on that. I did not remember to give him your name, but now I will.
Cool. All right.
I didn't really want to drive a Maserati, so I appreciate, you know, not giving me business that would have allowed me to do that.
Well, it's very fresh, so it's been within the last month, so it's not like this happened like a year and a half ago or anything.
Mm-hmm. Have you, so Tony, have you seen the new Batman?
Of course, I saw it opening weekend.
How was it? Was it?
I joked that I was going to, I joked with a lot of our athletes. I think I put it on Twitter. I was like, I'm going to show up in a Stormtrooper outfit just to fuck with people. No, I'll be like,
wait, this is the new Star Wars, right?
And, I didn't do that, but. It was awesome. Like, I know, I'm not going to give away anything because I know that there's people. You
don't say a word. I don't want to say.
I'm not going to say anything. All I will say was there's a lot of people out there comparing it to The Dark Knight, saying it isn't as good. And admittedly, like, I'll say about The Dark Knight Rises, it's not. There aren't as many memorable scenes that there were from The Dark Knight. But it was a fantastic, solid, solid, solid film, and I thought it did the franchise justice as far as how they ended it, you know, because this is Nolan's last one. Like, he's not. I mean, there's going to be another Batman movie, and Nolan. It's going to be hard to top what Nolan did. Let's just put it that way.
Sure. We'll see. Maybe it will go back to.
Why haven't you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet because the two times that I was like, oh, wait, I might actually have time to go see it today, it's been sold out in IMAX, and I will only see it in IMAX.
Yeah. It's a long – like, I saw it at I went to Regal Fenway by Fenway Park, and they have an RPX theater,
mm-hmm.
which is it's comparable to IMAX. Like, it's not IMAX, but
– it's not like D-Box. It's not where, like, the subs are in your seat.
I would say it's the second best movie experience you could go to behind IMAX. Like, it's comparable, and
cool.
It is. You will enjoy it. It's very long, though.
I think John's.
Hold on, someone's at the door.
All right. Well, we will be talking to Tony in a little bit, but the. I think that might about do it. I finished The West Wing. I don't know if we talked about that last time I was on.
Yes, I think we. I think so.
Fringe season 1-3 are up on Amazon streaming Prime for free.
Okay, I'm back.
You been watching any Fringe, Tony?
Oh, I got. Listen to this. I got Lisa into it.
Oh, like, sweet.
Into it. And we watched because I've only watched the first two seasons because I borrowed them off of you.
Yeah.
So I got her. We watched all of season one, and then I mean she's hooked. But the thing is I think we got maybe. 5 or 6 episodes into season 2, and like we were watching because you can find some of them online for free, like on Hulu or whatnot. Yeah. But we haven't watched them. We got through about mid season 2, and we need to get back on that train.
Do you have Amazon Prime at all?
What was that?
Do you have Amazon Prime?
No.
Oh, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free on their streaming service.
How much is Amazon Prime?
I think it's like $80 a year, but you get. You get access to their, like, it's basically Netflix streaming, okay. And you get free 2-day shipping on all your orders.
Okay, I'll look into it.
And it's,
or you could just send me your Blu-ray copies of season 3 and 4.
Well, I don't own Blu-rays of anything anymore. The only Blu-rays I own are my Fast and Furious DVDs, Transporters, and Crank 1 and 2, and then, did I say...
So you have the whole Jason Statham library of movies.
Yeah, I have the Jason Statham Platinum Collection, and the best of Jason Statham, which, I mean, that collection just is so vast. The, because, I mean, everything's, like, online on Amazon and for Netflix now. It saves me so much room to just not have all this junk. I mean, I actually have, a pile of Blu-rays. If I ever make it back out to CP, I'll just, like, give you all my extra... Blu-rays. I don't even watch.
Well, I haven't watched Fringe since season 2, so I have a lot of catching up to do.
It's great. And then they just, you know, their last season's coming up in September. They got 13 final episodes, and that's it.
And they're good. And I read that they're because of that because they know that they have to end it, and they're going to end it the right way. It's not going to be some like rushed like piece of shit.
Well, I'm telling you, like the story, they kind of alluded to it in like the second to last episode of the season 4. They alluded to what they were doing for season 5 as like it was kind of their their promo piece to Fox, and like, Fox, this is the idea that we have for season 5, come on, let us do this shit. And unbelievable episode, like this last season for 13 episodes, there's no filler, it's just 13 episodes of story and finishing the arc, and it's going to be nice.
Nice, yeah. So I got Lisa into it, and we got it because once I got her into Lost, and we watched everything there, and then I got her into Fringe. And but yeah, we're only about halfway through season two together.
Stoke. All right, that's where we're going to end it. We're at 26, 7 minutes of off-topic discussion, so we're going to go do the podcast.